MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, November 21st, 2019, the Beating the Book podcast. It's Gil Alexander. It is the Megapod. Very excited. Back in the saddle. Glad to be alive. And as always on the show, and I'll introduce them all at once because they've been so good filling in on a numbers game on VSiN for me. Mike Palm, Todd Wishnev. And also, our rotating guest today happens to be producer number 5, Jeff Parlay. So, hello to everybody. Mike, thank you for reining Todd in the last 3 days.
I'm not sure I've been successful at it, although I did make an effort.
Well, an effort is all we can really ask for. You guys were great. You were wonderful. I listened to as much of it as I can, but the reviews on Twitter seem to be all spectacular.
It's an important component of Todd being reined in, Gil. And you know this from experience, is his lack of show prep sort of reins himself in.
Oh, lack of show prep, okay. the willingness and almost happy to use the show as a vehicle to get people to research for him. Todd, what am I missing?
Look, I like crowdsourcing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I don't think there's anybody who does more show prep than me when I watch 8 billion games. Mike just likes to take snarky shots at me, you know, it's unbelievable. Now, the question is will you have a show when you come back on Monday? Because he did 14 hours of NHL this morning.
That was an interesting programming choice, but that's wonderful. You guys had Matthew Barnaby on, so that's nothing wrong. That's a great guest, right? Matthew Barnaby.
A lot of people thought it was great, Gil. You know, Todd thinks it was excessive because he doesn't know anything about the NHL and he didn't participate in any of the 3 segments. But
that's not true. What about my question about the 5 overtime game? That was excellent.
That was great. If somebody posts a number on that game 20 years later, you can bet on it.
What about Mike Babcock not being the coach anymore? And you talking about with that? Can we do anything about that number, Mike?
That's fascinating listening. Okay, Todd.
Well, I'm glad you guys' relationship has been repaired over these last 3 days. I'm glad it's moving forward. The Kevin Harlan-like laugh that you hear is that of Jeff Parlay. What's happening, Jeffrey?
Gil, it's a pleasure to hear you again. I will also say Todd and Mike have done a tremendous job, and Jacob Roach has done a tremendous job in my place behind the glass on the numbers game, too, the last few days.
So, yes, he has.
All of us will be back in the saddle sooner rather than later, which is good.
Todd put Jacob in a really good light at the end of Wednesday's program.
Here we go.
The South Florida kicker missed 4 field goals. Jacob, what do you think about that?
That's not what I said. Go check the tape, okay? Oh, my God. This guy's done.
We're all doing the show tomorrow together, so I appreciate that.
You should hear Mike when he finishes up the segment, Gil. You know how, I really appreciate you doing the show now because it's so smooth how you go in and out of the commercials and you go in and out of the segments where you have to do the reads. I mean, you're just a consummate professional. Mike finishes up the segment with JVT on the NBA and he goes, good hit, Jonathan. And it just like rolls to the commercial.
I heard you. Well, thank you for that. I heard you did end one segment with thank you. Was that correct?
I was thrown to the wolves. I didn't know about this whole doing it myself deal. I have to give you a lot thank more you. Credit. You and Colin Cowherd do your own show. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's very nice. Maybe. I appreciate it. But I appreciate you guys doing it, and thank you for doing it tomorrow. You guys will have to sit through this twice, so I apologize for it. So we'll act tomorrow like you're hearing it for the first time, maybe. But the reason that Guessing Lines was late on this podcast feed, and the reason that I wasn't on a numbers game, I think most are aware that I ruptured my Achilles tendon for the second time. Not the same one. I ruptured one of them 23 years ago. You kind of live in fear. Once one ruptures, that the other will rupture. And so finally it happened when I played Todd in tennis. Mike Palm was there about 17 days ago now. Actually, 16 days ago. I ruptured the Achilles then. And, you know, okay. I went in, I did a numbers game. I did the podcast with a freshly ruptured Achilles. The only day I missed really was the day of the surgery. And then after that, I came in with the, you know, newly repaired Achilles. And last week during the show, if you were really a keen listener, and I don't know that anybody could have figured this out, but during first segments of a numbers game, I would start to lose my breath. And because I was using a scooter, so after this surgery, after the first one when I was a young guy, they gave me crutches. And so I was, you know, going all around San Francisco. You're in your 20s. You're like, get out of my way. I'm strong. And this time I was like, I'll take the crutches. And they were like, no, you should really take this scooter. And so I was like, okay, I'll take the scooter. So I'm scooting all around the South Point, and we just sort of chalked it up because it was only the first segment. And Mike, you even noticed it one day when you were in with me that, you know, it was just, it's the cardio of going up the ramp, jumping in the chair, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, it happened several times last week. And then on Friday, it happened in a Myles Garrett segment late in the show after Alan Boston was on. And that was a little weird, but Parlay sort of said, hey, it was really the first segment, you talked a lot, so maybe that was it. So anyway, long story short, if that's even possible now, Monday of this week, I'm doing Guessing Lines with Chrissy, and as people know, I do a lot of the talking. Chrissy does a lot of the talking. It's basically each of us talking for an hour. And I noticed that every single segment I lost my voice. Like I was gasping for air, and I would have to throw it to Parlay or to Chrissy prematurely. And if you go back to Guessing Lines, maybe you'll be able to hear it. But after the show, I come and I have to, for the podcast, I have to record a 60-second intro, not a 60-second intro, but an intro for the show and then a sponsor read. And there was something about having the software in front of me where I could actually see the time. I have the time in the studio, too, on the radio show, but I don't really pay attention as much. But at home alone, with the timer, I could sense that I could only get through 30 seconds without having to gasp for breath. And at that point, that was sort of the trigger for me that something was terribly wrong. And so my brother happens to be a doctor. I texted him and I said, hey, look, I'm short of breath. What do you think? And he said, you just had surgery. You're not as young as you used to be. And you're a fat ass. So he threw that in, by the way. It has nothing to do with anything, but he just wanted to take a shot at me. You could have a blood clot from your surgery that's gone to your lungs. Go to the ER immediately. So I did. And so I scooted in with my scooter to the ER. Very quickly, after a CAT scan, and I'm losing my breath right now talking because they didn't get all of this, but you'll understand what I'm talking about momentarily, they recognized that I had a massive pulmonary embolism. A blood clot, because of my surgery, had gone up my leg in a 10-day span and had lodged right at the top of my lungs where it attaches to the heart. So my heart was being pressured too. So essentially what they did is they immediately, that night, were like, first of all, they're like, we got to hand it to you. We don't see people come into the hospital on a scooter, just willy-nilly with a pulmonary embolism. That said, we need to give you a thrombectomy immediately. So they basically went into my femoral vein and shot up through there to attack my blood clot. And they were able to, they can't really remove it, but they were able to get about half of it. And so it saved my life, period. You could have died. Serena Williams had this in 2011 when she was wearing sandals in a restaurant. She stepped on glass and she needed foot surgery. She ended up having a pulmonary embolism. I don't know if people remember that, if they're tennis fans. And Parlay reminded me that Russell Okung had it this offseason in the NFL. And again, pulmonary embolism left untreated could kill you. So anyway, that's the long story. That's why I haven't been there. and I'm just happy to be alive, dude. So,
well, how's your brother? Your brother with a diagnosis over the phone, so like unbelievable. That's incredible, don't you think?
Yeah. No, there's two lessons. One, it's good to have a doctor in the family. That's lesson number one. But the one that's more relatable is you really have to listen to your body. And for, you know, the better part of a week, you know, I was kind of like, well, you know, it's the first segment only and makes sense that, you know, my heart rate would be up because I'm scooting around and I'm going up ramps and, you know, maybe that's it. And then finally it did get to a point where there's the evidence right in front of you, right? And there's no denying. I can't speak for more than 30 seconds at a time. And so I just want people to remember that whenever they have these kinds of things, that they should always listen to their bodies because you never know what could be happening to you, especially in a post-surgical situation. So anyway, to everybody who wrote tremendously kind things on Twitter, I appreciate it. I believe I am told I will live now. So this will go away. My loss of breath will go away, and I will be able to talk at length again, either to people's happiness or otherwise. So that's the story, gentlemen. So that's why I appreciate you all very much for doing this show.
We're glad you're back, obviously.
And doing I feel like David Letterman. Remember when David Letterman had that heart problem and he thanked all his surgeons? I just want to thank everybody at Sunrise Hospital in Vegas, man. It was awesome. That's the story.
Well, the only thing I would say is if your body says to you, give me pizza every half an hour, you probably don't want to listen to that one.
That's a little different. That's a bit of a different problem. Yes.
There you go, Todd. Making the near-death experience about yourself somehow.
All right. Let's talk football first, though.
Jeff, I have a feeling your body says that too.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Todd.
All right. Let's start how we always start. Circa Sports update from Mike Palm, the consigliere over there at Circa Sports. What's the latest, Michael?
Well, Gil, as you know, this is the final weekend, final Sunday for quarter three. Another 143,750 on the line. We have one entry at 13.5, two entries at 13 points, and five entries at 12.5. So eight within one game of the lead. We saw in the first quarter 17-3 won it. In the second quarter, 17-2-1 won it. So I think we're going to be right there around that 17.5 mark. What will be remarkable, what will be astounding, is if for a third straight quarter, a single person won it all by themselves.
Really would be. And Todd, you sloughed off. Yes, you're not in this?
I'm dead. I'm for after being 24-15-1, I'm now 28-26-1. So I'm just hoping to have all the rest of my losses this week and then win every single game in December to win the December contest.
Yeah, and it does bear repeating one more time. The genius of the Circa Million, Circa Sports Million, is that they have the quarterlies. And so for the last 5 weeks of the season, we all start at 0-0. We're all still alive for a big prize of close to $150,000, so we're pumped about that. As you say, get rid of all your losses right now this week. I got a teaser right last week. That's the headline.
I was just about to say that. You haven't said anything about how you actually hit a teaser.
What did I say to you? I said, I'm going to catch you, Wishnev. I'm going to catch you on the teasers. And you laughed at me.
You're not far behind.
I know I'm not.
You're 2-9 on teasers. I'm 4-6-1 on teasers, so I could definitely be caught.
Let's be clear. Stanford Wong is 2-8 in teasers. I'm 0-1. Just want to point that out. All right, we'll get to our teasers momentarily. Let's start with Thursday nights. Thursday night football. Thursday night. We start with the Thursday night game, and it is Indianapolis at Houston, which last week we started out with really good primetime games. This one sort of continues that. The battle for the top of the AFC South. The winner will be the leader of the AFC South. If you tie, well, and they're both on top. Did this really open 6 somewhere? Is that true? Where did that open 6? I see a 6 opener. But Houston is 3.5 in this game. 3.5 is the spread. 46.5, somewhere in that pocket is the total. Curious, doesn't have to be a best bet, but curious if any of you have any real conviction in this game. Jeff, any thoughts here?
I kind of like first half under here, Gil. 23 is the number that I'm seeing consensus on that. Houston's offensive line was exposed again last week against Baltimore. I have a feeling they're going to have a problem with Indy's defense. Indy's defense is starting to play better, as we've seen over the last few weeks. Indy will still try their ground-and-pound offense. I know Marlon Mack is on the shelf with the broken hand, but that's the only angle I kind of like. Slow start on a short week. under first half 23 would be the angle I would look at tonight.
Mikey?
Gil, it's not a play for me because I'm conflicted here. I don't know if T.Y. Hilton's going to go. I think that makes a tremendous difference in the Colts offense. If you look at the first game, the statistics, the yards gained, very even in this game. We had two Deshaun Watson turnovers. The key difference was the Colts were 4-for-4 in the red zone, and the Bill O'Briens were 2-for-5. I look at this game both ways. I think there's a little bit of value in 3.5 is the number because the look ahead before last week's performances at Westgate with 5.5, but I'm not playing this game. Maybe an in-game opportunity if we see Hilton out there, but I'm not playing the game pre-flop.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I guessed. Oh, I did guess 5.5. I guessed Houston 5.5, so all right, starting to make sense. I'm starting to come out of my my hospital stay. Todd, any thoughts tonight?
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to say that this is the rematch of the game that Jeff had the under 23 a couple weeks ago, and he like barely survived with a push. I don't know. Did you remember that, Jeff?
That was the game that Deshaun Watson was called in the grasp on what should have been a touchdown, and I should have lost because of that.
We talked about that this morning on a numbers game with Mike Palm about the in the grasp touchdown, and I said, yes, I remember it well. Jeff was freaking out because he had the under 23 and he got a miracle push. What I've said about this game on a numbers game all week is I don't want a fat and happy team against every team. The Indianapolis Colts come in fat and happy with a nice win. The Houston Texans come in off an absolute destructive loss, and I do not want Indianapolis in this spot. Now, do I want Houston? Probably not either, but I certainly do not want to take Indianapolis when I've got the I don't want the fat and happy team. I want the angry team.
Yeah, Houston fell behind Baltimore last week, 34-0. For those who need the reminder, they came in with 4 wins in 5 games before that game, had a bye even, and then proceeded to fall behind the Ravens 34-0. They only had 102 yards of offense in the first half, gave up 4 sacks to fall behind 14-0 to the dynamo that is Lamar Jackson, 2 of 10 on third downs in the game, 1 of 4 on fourth down. They were outgained 491-232. They were out time of possession, if you will, 36-19 to 23-41. They were sacked a grand total of 7 times if you add in the 7 to A.J. McCarron. But let me just ask you this before we move on from this game. How much of that game, and I know it was 41-7, and as I said, it was 34-0, but that non-PI, which even withstood a review on DeAndre Hopkins, this is one of the big sort of nuanced debates one has on Twitter, one has with their buddies. Yes, it was 41-7, but I'm in the camp that if that goes Houston's way, none of us know how the rest of that game's going. Probably Baltimore still wins, but like the entire complexion of that game, in my opinion, changes, and I'm curious how you guys come down on that.
You know, I thought about what you're saying, Gil, because I had plus 10.5 with the Texans, and I learned during the game that Deshaun Watson had never lost a game by more than one possession or one score in his entire NFL career until that game. And I kept thinking, wow, if we would have got that pass interference call, would everything have been different? I think it might have been a little different, but that game was such a dominant performance by Baltimore. Ultimately, I think they still get killed.
Ultimately, I think they still get beat. I just don't know. I just don't think we can say anything with certainty. I don't know.
Well, Gil, also, that would have put Houston up 7-0 in all likelihood.
Right.
So then you would have had Baltimore chasing the game. I know it was still early, but they would have been down a touchdown. It's a completely different game, potentially. So I'm kind of with you, Gil. We're never going to know. Baltimore probably still wins the game, but it sure as hell wouldn't have been the beatdown that we saw.
Yeah, and I guess the point here is, does that then change your handicapping if you do feel that way, right, on this particular game? Sounds like nobody has any real conviction, although Jeff has a first half play. Let us start with the best bets. Parlay. You get first shot, sir.
All right. This is, as Todd usually says, Gil, it's a tough week again in the National Football League. But I'm going to start. Let's go to East Rutherford first. My Jets take on the upstart, nearly AFC West leading Oakland Raiders. I'm going to go over 46.5 here in this game. The Raiders had a slow offensive performance against Cincinnati. I think their offense will be able to move the ball against the Jets, who right now are playing cornerbacks number 6, 7, and 8 right now because of injury and just the fact that their regular corners stink. They're on their fourth and fifth backup linebackers. Feel like Oakland's going to be able to move the ball, and they're really going to be able to I think Jacobs will be able to run the ball because of that Oakland offensive line. I know the Jets have been good against the run, but I think Oakland's O-line will figure them out. And I think the Jets are going to move the ball against Oakland as well. Darnold has played much better the last 2 weeks against bad defenses in the Giants and the Redskins. Oakland is another bad defense. I think Darnold plays well again. This feels like a game where both teams are in the high 20s. Someone's winning this game 31-28, 34-28, something in that category. So I like this well over that 46.5 consensus that I'm seeing right now.
Over 46.5, the Jets eclipsing 400 yards of offense last time for the first time in 20 games because they got to play the Washington Redskins. 19 of 30 was Darnold for 293, four touchdowns, one pick. He was sacked twice. Ryan Griffin was his big target in that game, 5 for 109, a touchdown. The Raiders, they flirted with disaster with the Bengals, but they got it done eventually. Derek Carr had a great game, 25 of 29 for 292, one touchdown, one pick. He was sacked three times, but Joshua Jacobs keeps doing his thing. 23 carries for 112, his fourth 100-yard game in the last 6 weeks. Max Crosby with a team rookie record, four sacks. The Raiders were 7 of 15 on third downs. Third straight win for the Raiders. All at home, by the way, after a seven-week stretch on the road, temporarily in a tie with the Kansas City Chiefs until the Chiefs won that game in Mexico City against the Charge. By the way, Todd, you're supposed to learn the Charger song. We'll get back to that. Let's do that as a placeholder. We were giggling in the middle of your little capsule there, Jeff. I don't know if you caught Todd chuckled and then I chuckled. The reason is because we get to see Mike Palm on Skype video, and Mike is holding a massive cross with his savior on that cross. What is the significance here, Mike?
Todd has become obsessed with the cross in the background with the rabbit ears around it in my office. And so I thought I'd hold it up here for good. It's a very, for those obviously you can't see, it's a very Baroque crucifix.
Yes.
Baroque. By the way, last week I thought it was like some new thing where they have rabbit ears with a cross in it. It turns out that I was right. There are actually rabbit ears behind the cross, but they're not put together. But maybe now that we think about it, Mike, maybe you could, you know, come up with a new product of rabbit ears with the cross. It's like a way to bring Jesus in to listen to you better because you get the rabbit ears or something. I don't know. Maybe we got a product there.
Stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Todd brings up a good point, though. Although 2,000 years old, Christianity is always evolving.
Oh, way to save Todd on that one. Very nicely done. Mike with the cross in his hand with a best bet.
Well, I'd like to balance Mr. Parlay, who Todd commented looked much, much thinner on Market Watch yesterday than he remembered him. His overplay with an under. I like the under in the Steelers-Bengals game. You know, I don't know where the points coming from in this game.
Wait, Mike, you're not going to use a hockey pick as your first pick?
You done, Todd? Are you done? Okay, not everybody that tunes into the Megapod watches a numbers game when Gil is out. Okay, let's get that. So that you're losing people with these references unless you explain them. All right, Steelers-Bengals. I got to tell you, Gil, I was of the camp that when Mason Rudolph came in to replace Big Ben, I thought Tomlin was really babying him. And with all these, as Todd said, push passes that they ran on Monday night against the Bengals the first time they played. But after watching that performance in Cleveland last week, I understand now. He's not very good. And I know that the Bengals' defense is not great, but they did go on the road and hold a very good offense to 17 points last week. In Oakland. And as far as the Bengals go, as long as Dalton doesn't play, I don't see them getting past 10 with Finley at quarterback against a very, very decent Steelers defense. So I'm going to go under 38.5 here as my best bet, first best bet.
Under 38.5, Todd confirming 38.5, good number, yes.
I like that Mike didn't try to give himself an extra half a point.
My pick, my first best bet, I know we didn't get it last week, but we got it the five previous weeks, is once again the Miami Football Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins. Yep, I'm doing it again. And here's the reason. The Cleveland Browns should not be favored by 10.5 points against anybody. Cleveland, again, coming off that win against the Steelers, I should say, a game that they desperately tried to give to the Steelers but couldn't. Baker Mayfield, 17 of 32 for 193, two touchdowns, no picks, and a sack. Odell Beckham was targeted 10 times, but they only got the ball to him 4 times for 60 yards. 8 penalties against for the Brownies, 121 yards in penalties. Dolphins coming off a beatdown at the hands of the Bills. I think it was
37-24, I think.
Yeah, Miami kept on in teaser position, but they were never in cover position. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 32 of 45 for 323. No touchdowns, no picks, sacked 7 times. And the Dolphins, in what was a theme last week of many teams, very few yards rushing, 23 yards rushing. I get it, you fall behind. But to completely abandon the running game and to completely do nothing on the ground is this new thing in the National Football League. I guessed, you know, this is one of these interesting lines that you guess on a Monday. Because I have the reference of the previous Steelers-Dolphins game in Pittsburgh, which was the most off guess of all time, where I guessed Dolphins would be 7.5-point dogs when, in fact, they were 14.5-point dogs, or 14, whatever it was at the time, which was just outlandish. I knew that a guess of 7.5 here would be short, but that's what I would have this number. And Chrissy's response, Chris Andrews, South Point Casino Sportsbook Director, he was like, I like your number better. But it's not only 10, it's 10.5. And just on principle, Cleveland should not be that big of a favorite. I'm taking the Miami Dolphins based on the number here. Not going to watch it. Don't want to have to live through it. But Dolphins plus 10.5 is pick number one for me. Dad.
I kind of agree with you, Gil. I'm just a little concerned that Miami had covered all those zillion games in a row, and now maybe they'll have a fallback. But how can Freddie Kitchens be favored by 10.5 against anybody? I mean, that's ridiculous. But anyways, you want my best bet, I assume, because we've had Jeff's over 46.5 and Mike's under 38.5. So my best bet is going to be, you ever hear of the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Oh, I know what's coming. Tampa Bay
here
over.
Here it comes, folks. Your Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the total one more time, baby. I see a half or 51, Gil?
I see 51. Yeah, 51 is, I think, is more than 51.5.
I don't know what Mike Palm's waving at, but I want to just tell you why I want to take the Tampa Bay over. Tampa Bay has gone over 8,000 weeks in a row. They're the greatest over team since sliced bread. All they don't play defense, which is great for the other team's offense. They can play offense, so they can get you points on their side of the football. So it's a fantastic over team because every time somebody has the ball, they're a threat to score immediately. And on top of that, you get the beautiful idea that old Jameis can blow up at any moment and throw a pick six for you as well. So that's why Tampa Bay is such a beautiful over. I'm not sure what their record is. I think it's like 8-2 or 9-2 to the over this year, but it's some ungodly record. And they're not even making us pay that much. 51? It's not even that high. Atlanta, okay, here's Atlanta. The worst defensive team in football beyond the Massachusetts Minutemen until the last 2 weeks when all of a sudden they decided to play defense against New Orleans and whoever they played last week. It doesn't come to mind immediately, but they played Carolina, and they played good on defense against Logan. So basically, which Atlanta defense is the real defense, the one that didn't play the entire season or the one that played for 2 weeks? I don't know, but I'll say this. Give me Tampa Bay over 51. Thank you.
And thank you. He ends everything with thank you now.
Now on, I'm going to do a lot of those thank yous. People seem to like that.
So that came down from 54.5. So you're chalking that up to the recency effect of the Atlanta Falcons finding their defense? Is that what you're chalking that up to?
I don't know what people are looking at. What in the hell are they thinking? Last week, the same thing against the Saints. They people bet it down. I mean, it's unbelievable. Are these people watching the games? I mean, last night again in the Toledo-Buffalo game, it was 28-20 at the half, and they were betting the second half under. I don't know what they were seeing because both teams were going up and down the field, and it was so cold in Buffalo, nobody wanted to tackle anybody. I took the over. Guess what? We got there. It's ridiculous sometimes, these people.
I had Buffalo in the over in that game pre-flop. That worked out. The MAC is horrific, by the way. Like, these teams in the MAC are so bad this year. Whoever gets into bowl games, he was mentioning this over the last night, he was talking about this. It's almost an auto play against these MAC teams. They are so bad this year. Those Tuesday and Wednesday games are awful. Like, you wonder what level football you're watching with that. Just a brief aside, by the way. Jeff, we're back to you.
I really like them because it's hard to get tickets to the game, so I just like to watch them on TV. If you notice, the crowds are, whew, they're outstanding.
Outstanding. Not a ticket remains. Jeff? Number two.
I'm liking overs today, this week for whatever reason, guys. And this one, it may come as a shock to everyone listening and to you guys there. I'm going over in Buffalo and Denver at 37.5. Now, I understand that both of these teams are good defensive teams. I know Denver's offense is led by Brandon Allen. I know the Bills are led by the erratic Josh Allen. But you know what? I'll say this with Buffalo's offense. Now that Singletary is healthy, the run game looks normal. John Brown has been great as a legitimate number one wide receiver for Josh Allen. And I know Denver's corners are good, but they really got exposed last week in the second half against Minnesota. The third, all I need to get over in this is 24-20. Yeah, I feel that's more than possible here. And Brandon Allen's been pretty good in his two starts for the Denver Broncos, which is a sentence I don't think any of us would have expected to be hearing at any point this year, regardless of who Brandon Allen would be playing for. But I like over 37.5 in Buffalo. The weather's going to be good, too. It's supposed to be 40 and sunny. Not much wind there in Orchard Park, under 10 miles an hour, so that we can get field goals without ridiculous wind. So I like over 37.5 in Buffalo and Denver. Two AFC East, AFC West matchups over for me so far.
I appreciate the fact that you checked your Doppler and checked the weather forecast, Jeff, because this is a perfect example, Todd, that you would be in the middle of your rant on a game on an over, and you would be like, hey, can anybody check the weather for me? Is what's that going to be? Like in the middle of it. See, Jeff did it before the show.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear the last 10 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, Mike. Mike, without a cross, he has decided to convert or at least shun his religion for the moment and make another bet.
As much as Todd believes in Tampa Bay over, I believe in fading Dwayne Haskins. I'm going to lay 3 points with the Lions on the road.
That Sorry, means... Mike, try again.
Well, you going to move the line again, Todd? You screwed me on half a goal on Tuesday.
Gil, what's the line? It's not 3 in Detroit, Washington.
No, and the reason that I know it's 3.5 is because Mike has jumped exactly on my number 2 bet. I'll let Mike go first. It's -3.5.
But do you notice how he tries to slide that past us, Gil, in a certain way? It brings to mind another person we always love to talk about, but he tries to slide those half points by. He tried to slide an entire half goal past me on a numbers game, an entire half a goal. That's a huge number, 5.5 to 6. It's incredible.
Someone get him a respirator. He's losing his breath. Jeez. You still like it at 3.5, Mike?
Yeah, I do. Here's what I do, Gil. I look at the circa number right before we go on the air, and it was 3. So 3.5 here. Dwayne Haskins is not an NFL quarterback.
No.
It's a complete joke. The Jets are not a juggernaut of a defense. They tried to keep Washington in the game last week with all their mistakes, and still Dwayne Haskins cannot do it. He cannot read a defense. There's a very limited playbook for Washington. He just doesn't belong in the league. He's not ready. I'm not sure he'll ever be ready. The Lions are still going to put up points with Driscoll. He's serviceable. I have to fade Haskins until Callahan decides or the organization decides that he's not the answer. So it's just like pitchers. When we get these pitchers in baseball, we hope they don't send them down to AAA. I hope they keep starting Dwayne Haskins every week. We'll lay the 3.5 with the Lions.
Well, they are going to start Dwayne Haskins Jr. every week because that's what they said they'd do, and Daniel Snyder wants to be besties with him, so it's going to happen. The Lions have lost 6 of 7. I don't care. I don't care if it's Matthew Stafford. I don't care if it's Jeff Driscoll. I don't care if it's Greg Landry. I don't care if it's Gary Danielson at his current age. For the Redskins, worst 10 games.
How about Joey Harrington?
Or Joey Harrington. For the Skins, it's their worst 10-game start since 1961. They were 0-9-1 apparently that year. They're 1-9 right now. Haskins, by the way, 19 of 35 last week for 214, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, and here's the deal. Sacked 6 times. Redskins could only muster 225 total yards. They had 11 penalties for 66 yards. Did you see that video with Dwayne Haskins pleading with his offensive lineman, "Tell me what I need to do to help you"? And the linemen just sat there and were either speechless or almost snickered. It was so uncomfortable to watch. It was just...
Full frontal lobotomy.
What's that?
Full frontal lobotomy for Clem.
For Clem. He calls him Clem Haskins. Former Washington Bullet, former Golden Gopher coach Clem Haskins. The Redskins had a 16-quarter streak of not scoring a touchdown until they broke that with a Darius Geis 45-yard screen last week in the fourth quarter. The last team, we were mentioning this on Guessing Lines this week, the last team to go 16 quarters without scoring a touchdown was, of all things, the 2000 Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens, who started that year 5-1 with Tony Banks, and then they had this unbelievable drought, and that's when they went to Trent Dilfer, and the rest is history. They won the Super Bowl. Or as Redskins fans today like to say, so you're saying there's a chance. Skins allowed 34 points to the Jets, by the way, who entered that game with the worst offense in the league, and now it looks like Greg Minuski's job is in jeopardy as D coordinator. I'm with Mike. I don't care who's playing quarterback. It's 3.5. Give me the Lions. Prove me wrong, Redskins. One of those bets you got to be willing to lose. Toddy, number two.
Okay, here's what I'm willing to do. I'm going to pass the hat right now, and I'm going to offer both of you to put money in the hat for me not to bet Detroit this week, because if I bet Detroit along with you guys, here's what's going to happen.
We're going to lose.
Mr. Haskins is going to go back to pass early in the first quarter, take a ferocious hit, be knocked out of the game, bringing in, yep, that's right, Casey Keenum, and then Redskins go on to victory because I bet the game. So if you guys would like to protect your bet, I would suggest buying me off from betting that game.
Protect your bet. Is that what you said?
There you go. You got to protect your bet.
You got to protect your bet.
No, but do you know that if I do bet Detroit, 100%
we know. 100% we know.
Okay. So now let me give you my second pick. That's why I'm going to stay off this game. I happen to agree with both of you. You have to just keep betting against Haskins. He's a gift. He's a Christmas gift. You got to love it. Now, also, I kind of like what Jeffrey said about the over 37.5 Buffalo-Denver. I think those 37.5 should be reserved for really, really, really cruddy offensive teams like the Bears. Buffalo and Denver are not that bad, so I kind of like what Jeffrey had to say, too. But I'm going to go with my second pick with the Philadelphia Eagles, fly, Eagles, fly, What?
You faked us out. All right. Philly.
Yes, I messed up there.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Eagles giving one. Is that what you have? Pick them or one? What do you have?
Kind of all over the place, right? There's a bunch. There's a couple ones. There's actually more 1.5s than anything. So we'll say 1.5.
Well, I'll take it at 1.5 then.
All right.
I'll take the Eagles at 1.5. And here's why I like the Eagles. To me, I can't get out of my head the fact that Seattle should have lost to Cleveland on the road in a game that Cleveland just gave away. They were up 21-12 late in the first half, going in for another score, and Jesus Mayfield throws an interception in the back of the end zone and totally changes the game. They barely won that Rams game. I know they've got MVP Russell Wilson. I know he's fantastic and everything, but the Eagles, to me, are a weird kind of team. They seem to play up to the level of the competition. Last week, they could have won that game against New England. They played very well on defense. You couldn't really fault them there. They just couldn't get anything going on offense. But a lot of people have had trouble with the New England defense. The New England defense. So I'm not that shocked that they lost the game, but I thought they kept it close. I think it's a real tough place to play. Seattle has to go all the way across country to play them. Now, granted, Seattle has an excellent record, as heard on the numbers game this morning, doing these cross-country games. But, 1.5 is just such a low number. All I got to do is have the Eagles win the game practically. I'll take the Eagles.
How do we feel about Carson Wentz? I mean, the Eagles did not have DeSean Jackson. They did not have Alshon Jeffrey. They didn't have Jordan Howard, so there's that. But, man, sometimes you look up and Carson Wentz is really, like, some of his throws, I'm like, wow. I don't really expect that from Carson Wentz. I'm curious where you stand on him now, Todd.
I used to think he was, like, really, really good.
Me too.
Now I'm sort of thinking he's maybe just good. They've had some good games too. Look, they went into Buffalo, a tough place to play offensive football, and they played really well on the offensive end. So I just think they're an incomplete team. They went into Green Bay and played very well on offense. They're very Jekyll and Hyde-ish, but they wouldn't be the first team to have trouble against New England defense. And I don't think Seattle's defense is that good. So, that's why I want the Eagles.
Yeah, and I still think they win the NFC East. I really do, much to the chagrin of Cowboys fans. But I just think that they will be the ultimate survivor. Do we know who's playing among those guys, by the way?
Well, DeSean Jackson's season is over, Gil. He was, I believe he was placed on IR earlier this week.
Man.
But Alshon Jeffrey, it seems to be trending correctly, though. He actually was limited in practice yesterday. Same deal with Jordan Howard. The only non participants yesterday were Lane Johnson, who's in concussion protocol, and Nelson Agholor, who has a knee injury.
Thank you for that, Jeff. I missed all of that while a massive pulmonary embolism was being shot out of my my lungs. The Lane Johnson thing is interesting, though, right? Because the Eagles-Patriots game, you can kind of trace that game changing on Lane Johnson's exit from that game. It was 10-0 Eagles. Lane Johnson went out. Final score, New England 17. Eagles 10. And we've had Lane Johnson's stats in previous years in and out of lineup, so it's not like it's just that one game with him. So that's big. We'll see if he gets out of protocol or not. Jeff, pick number three.
All right, Gil, I'm going to agree with your first pick here and take the Miami Dolphins with the 10 and a hook. How is Freddie Kitchens coach team favored by double digits against any National Football League team? That's the question I'll ask here. Even when they play the Bengals in a few weeks, they should not be favored by double digits. Miami's been playing better. I know they never were in cover range last week against Buffalo, but they still were competitive. They had a two-point conversion to get down 8 in the fourth quarter that they didn't convert, and then Buffalo went right down the field to end that game and win by 17. But the Dolphins have at least resembled a National Football League team now since that game against Washington when they put Fitzpatrick back in the second half. And something that Mike said a few weeks ago, but he's not wrong, Brian Flores has done a tremendous job down there to get that team that has a roster that's not built to win and not built to win for a while now. It has them playing hard, has them competitive, and they should be able to lose this game by a touchdown. It wouldn't shock me if Cleveland is dumb enough to lose this game outright as a 10.5-point favorite at home. So I'm with you, Gil, on the Dolphins plus 10.5 for my third one this week.
All right. I like it. Jeff's number three and my number one matchup. Mikey?
I'm going to make another play that's against a team and not on a team. I'm going to take Daniel Jones and the New York Football Giants and 6 points going to Soldier Field against this hapless Bears offense that lacks quarterback play, that lacks a running game, and lacks a professional field goal kicker.
Why is he on the roster at this point?
I don't know. I just don't know that the Bears should really be favored over anybody other than Dwayne Haskins by 6 points. I mean, yes, their defense is still amongst the top 6 or 7 defenses in the league, but I mean, I personally don't believe that there was some serious hip injury that Mitchell Trubisky suffered late in the fourth quarter.
I don't either.
That led Nagy to pull him out. I don't understand. There wouldn't have been a need for this emotional conversation to put Chase Daniel in with 2.5 minutes and go and tell him, keep in bounds so the clock runs out. It's just too much. I don't know that the Bears are going to score much more than 6 points. I know the Giants' secondary is bad, but you don't have a quarterback that can take advantage of it. So just too many points. I'll take the 6.
I got no argument with him. Mitch Trubisky practiced in full yesterday. He's day-to-day, though, officially listed as day-to-day. My third pick was a toss-up. Ultimately came down to a couple games, one of which was Baltimore -3 against the Rams on the road on Monday night. I decided not to make that play, even though that was my first cut. I am taking the Atlanta Falcons, giving 4 at home against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. High total in this game. Todd's over on the game. I think it's even higher than that. I agree with Todd on that. And whenever you have high games like these, high total score games, that is, then the scores tend to be volatile. I really believe in the Falcons' transformation here on defense. They have outscored opponents here in the last two games 55-12. 55-12. That was against the Saints and last week against Carolina. So they really shut down Drew Brees. And remember, that game was just, at the time, mind-boggling. And Carolina last week, they were +4 in turnovers. They have been nothing short of dominant. They have not yielded a touchdown, just 4 field goals the last 2 weeks. And Matt Ryan does Matt Ryan things, 21 of 31 last week for 311. 1 touchdown, no picks, sacked 3 times. Calvin Ridley was his big target, 8 for 143 and a touchdown. Julio is still there. And then there's Tampa Bay. And there was a quote from Mike Evans, who, by the way, is uncoverable. Let me just say that. But Mike Evans last week after Tampa Bay's loss to the Saints, where the Saints outgained the Bucs 195-11 while building an early 20-0 lead, controlled the ball for 20 of the game's first 25 minutes. And they ended up losing. They were -4 in turnovers, by the way. They had 4 turnovers. They were -4 in turnovers against New Orleans. They only had 36 rushing yards. Again, this weird thing last week where there was a bunch of teams, even in defeat and in victory, like the Niners, who barely had any rushing yards. It was the weirdest thing mass throughout the NFL. But Mike Evans said after the game, and this for some reason resonated with me as just the denial that the Bucs are in. He said, quote, "It's very frustrating. We've got the players. It's never been about the players since I've been here. It's just we've been very, very inconsistent." And I just think about him saying that. I'm like, no, dude, you're not inconsistent. You just don't have winning football players. You may be, but your teammates are not. And you know, the fact that they had Vernon Hargraves and they had to just get rid of him for not hustling, like, that's a perfect example. You guys are just not a winning organization. And Bruce Arians, for all the love that he gets, I'm not sure he gets it either in Tampa Bay. I actually believe in the Falcons' transformation. I think this is more of the team they should have been at the beginning of the year than the team we were seeing early on. I will give the four. I will take the Falcons. Todd?
Well, I am going to do something here based on the fact that I've seen this pattern now where you get these backup quarterbacks and they're able to, like, you know, hold things together with duct tape for a week or two or three even, and then they start to fall apart, like Logan Allen in Carolina. And we've got another Allen down in Denver.
Logan Allen.
Who is Logan Allen?
Who the hell is Logan Allen?
Wait, what's the guy's name in Carolina?
Kyle Allen.
Kyle Allen. Whatever.
Who the hell is Logan Allen?
Don't we have enough Allens already? By the way, how did you come up with Logan of all names?
I don't know how I messed up his first name. I'm sorry.
Logan.
But the guy Allen in Carolina has seemed to fall from the heights of heaven back down to earth. And I think the same thing may happen to another Allen. I believe his name is Brandon Allen. Am I right about that?
I think it was Mel Allen in this case.
Mel Allen. Mel Allen, who's quarterbacking the Denver Flacco Fangios.
Yeah.
And, you know, quietly, the Fangio Flaccos have covered 5 out of the last 6 games. And I just have to say there has to be a fanny pack sighting in the next game because he can't cover 6 out of 7. Come on, Mr. Fangio. You know, I think that Minnesota, Denver really went in there, was up 20-0 at the half.
Jeez.
And then just totally fell apart to Mike's Hall of Fame team, the Minnesota Vikings. We had a little argument about the Vikings on a numbers game this week. I contend the quarterback is still Kirk Cousins, and he's not very
Kirk.
Good.
It's Kirk, anyway, Todd. It's not Kurt.
Oh, I heard his Cousins. Anyways, Mr. Cousins is not very good. Anyways, here's the deal. Denver was up 20-0 against Minnesota. I feel like they really, you know, were all in on that and then blow the game. They haven't had really a stinker in 4 weeks since they got whacked by Kansas City. They played well at Indianapolis. They beat Cleveland, and then they played that great game at Minnesota where they almost had the upset but couldn't pull it off. I feel like they're due for a stinker, and going into Buffalo with a backup quarterback named Logan, Mel, Brandon, I don't care what his first name is, but his last name's Allen, and he's from the Razorbacks. I think he might have some trouble against your Buffalo Bills. That Bills defense is still pretty darn good. And, you know, Josh Allen, he keeps getting it more and more together week after week. He's tough to defense. You know, he beats you with his legs. He can throw the ball a little bit. Give me Buffalo Bills -4. Is that the correct number, Gil?
That is correct. It is -4, sir.
Buffalo -4.
All right. Logan Allen, by the way, a quick Google search reveals that he's a pitcher in the Indians organization. Previously in the Padres organization.
He might be able to come in for, you know, a quarter in relief.
Logan Allen. Maybe Dick Allen. Maybe more likely. The Broncos, first team since 2014 to not score a fourth quarter touchdown in 6 straight games. They had 3 cracks at it with 10 seconds left against the Vikings last week because Mike Zimmer, in all his infinite wisdom with chaos and the Broncos having no timeouts and the clock running, decides, you know what, I'll call a timeout and let them organize. So they get 3 shots at this. Like, I don't think enough was made of that gaffe. Everyone's like, ooh.
That was just like the Raiders against Detroit.
Yep, exact same thing. And they're all like, oh, they could have been called for pass interference. Ooh, they could have been this. How about not calling the timeout? Like, that to me was the biggest thing in that. But the Vikings do erase the 20-0 halftime deficit. Touchdowns on each of their first 4 drives in the second half. Kirk Cousins, Mr. Wishnev, was 29 of 35 for 319. 3 touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked 5 times. Stephon Diggs was a big target, 5 for 121 and a touchdown. According to Sport Radar, it was only the 14th time in the history of the National Football League that a 20-plus point halftime lead turned into defeat. By the way, that does not include, by the way, a span of 100 games, including the playoffs. since it happened the last time, first time in 5 years, does not include...
What was the last time?
Well, the real last time it happened, but it wasn't a 20-plus point halftime lead, was the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Falcons. So this is really only describing the regular... Well, this is really only describing specifically 20-point halftime deficits, but remember in that game... New England was down 18 points at the half. They were down 18 points at the half, and then it got to 28-3, and they came all the way back. But it gives you an indication, just so we can appreciate it one more time, how amazing that Patriots comeback was against the Falcons. It just doesn't happen, you know? So this was only a 14th such instance of this particular thing happening. And again, the Vikings were held to 37 yards rushing, and you can say, well, they were down 20-0, Gil. But you still have Dalvin Cook... And you still have a whole half, so I get it, you don't go to the running game as much, but to abandon it completely is a very interesting thing, and it happened all over the league last week. All right, gentlemen, teaser of the week. Everybody knows.
By the way, before you go on to the teasers, I don't like those stats where people go, oh, they abandoned the run. You know who abandons runs and passes all the time? Yes, that's right, Billy Belichick. He doesn't care about that nonsense. He just matches his guys up against Urine's guys, and he beats you.
Yeah, but the other guys aren't doing what Bill Belichick is doing, so that's a false comeback. They're not doing it the way that Belichick is doing it. They're not going, oh, yes, I'm going to beat the best thing on the other team. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. These other guys aren't that smart,
well,
as you very well know.
They should.
Well, that's different, Todd. Should is different. All right, teaser of the week. Everybody knows I'm going to catch Todd, so everybody's waiting for my teaser. No one's waiting for Todd's. Jeff, we start with yours.
I'm going to go with the Dolphins and the Giants, Gil. Put Miami up to 16.5. Put the Giants up to 12. Gil, when I'm guessing lines on Monday, what did I say to you about the Bears being as big of a favorite as they were on your guess when you guessed 6.5? My word was, that's gross.
Yes.
I don't think the Bears have a chance of winning this game by 2 touchdowns. So I like the Giants plus the 12. And I like Miami 10.5, so why wouldn't I like them 16.5? So that's what I'll go with here.
Mike Palmetto?
Well, despite a really tough spot for the Raiders, I'm going to tease them up to 8.5. I know that it's...
How do you tease the Raiders to 8.5?
They're the favorite. They're the favorite.
Oh, they're the favorite.
Didn't this happen last week, too?
Yeah, I think it did happen this week, too. It did happen as well. Okay. Scratch that.
Okay.
Let me substitute parlays Giants at 12 there then, for the reasons already stated, because I gave the argument. Now, I'm going to take the Packers. Can I do this, Todd, and tease them up to 9.5?
Nine.
Go.
He'd go to nine. Yeah.
Okay, 9. All right. I think that we, in everybody's haste to say the 49ers were better than we thought they were, we have to consider the injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball to a young quarterback, not having targets like Sanders and Kittle. I just think that although I hate the Packers defense, I think that this game is so big in terms of playoff implications, in terms of seeding, in terms of, you know, really from being a 1 to a 2 to a 5 seed in these races in the NFC, that San Francisco is not going to rout the Packers in this game. I think this is a close game. I think either team can win this game. It's a one-score game, so we'll take it up to 9.
For me, it is New England and Green Bay. Green Bay, you know, look, 9 points against these Niners. I am not sold on Jimmy Garoppolo. One week he looks great, another he doesn't. By the way, in games he has moments where he looks great, and then I'm like, oh, my God, they're never doing anything with this guy. But you give me 9 points with Green Bay, I will take that happily. The New England thing for me, which is basically just taking it down to a pick'em, really a half point. But New England for me is, this is such the mismatch of coaching. And as we've said many times on A Numbers Game, as we've said many times on Beating the Book podcast, if you could only have one NFL handicapping tool at your disposal, let it be your coach's power rankings. This is Bill Belichick against the brain trust that is Jason Garrett and Kellen Moore. I'm sorry. You're just in a tease. That's just a pick 'em. All day, every day, New England along with the Packers. Stanford Wong it is.
I don't know if you noticed this, but I was watching, you know, but we get to the South Point early to try to save seats for people. You know, Jeff Barles is always asking me, can you save me a seat? And then RJ wants me to save him a seat. And then Miguel wants me. It's like a million people. So I get there early to try to save seats. And I'm watching the pregame shows, you know, while I'm trying to decide last minute things, if I want to do anything. And there's a, you know how like they have the feeds from all the different games there, right? And they've got Garrett on the sidelines. He's throwing the football around like he's at the park on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm thinking to myself, and he's literally doing this for like, you know, 3-4 minutes. He's like throwing it like he's going to be the starting quarterback. And I'm thinking, you know, 25 minutes before the game, this is what you're doing? I can't see Belichick throwing the ball around. He would be like, you know, coming up with his last second offensive lineman blocking schemes, coming up with great special teams plays or something. This guy's throwing the ball around like he's in the park. I couldn't believe it. I was really shocked.
By the way, did you see the Field Yates, before I get off the Patriots for a second and the Cowboys, did you see the Field Yates tweet earlier this week, the active number of consecutive winning seasons for NFL teams? So he basically just goes 0 to 19. He just scrolls it down on a tweet. And so the active number of consecutive winning seasons, 0. Arizona, Atlanta, Carolina, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Denver, Detroit, Green Bay, Jacksonville, Miami, Giants, Jets, Oakland, Tampa Bay, Washington, all coming off losing seasons. How many people have one winning season currently and are trying to get to two? Chicago, Houston, Indianapolis, and San Francisco. How many have two or have gotten to two this year? That's also a possibility. Baltimore, the Chargers, the Rams, the Vikings, the Saints, and the Eagles. All right. How many have gotten to three? By the way, we've just got to two. There are only six teams left in the NFL that we haven't mentioned so far. Three, Dallas and Tennessee. Dallas and Tennessee, which might surprise some people, have three consecutive winning seasons. We only have four teams left. We skip four. Pittsburgh has had five consecutive winning seasons. That's in jeopardy. Kansas City has had six consecutive winning seasons. Seattle has had seven consecutive winning seasons. And then you have to go all the way to 19 for the Patriots. It's just unbelievable, the difference between them and every other franchise in this league. Just another way to put it in context from Field Yates. I thought that was a great tweet from him. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that is pretty astounding, especially, I mean, they've only been able to change the footballs for the first 15 of those seasons. So, you know, that is pretty incredible. They've able to, been, you know, keep the streak going for the last 4 years.
What's your teaser, Toddy?
My teaser is Green Bay as well. I am with you 1,000% with this Jimmy G nonsense. Think he's good, but he's a little too interception prone, fumble prone. He scares the bejesus out of me every time he goes back to pass. You know, and the offensive line sometimes has problems and he can take some big hits. So I'm not 100%. I think we'll have to be considering betting against Jimmy G in the playoffs. And so give me Green Bay plus the 9. And then in the other one, I'm going to go with Indy plus 9.5, just because this feels like a Bill O'Brien-ish game that'll be tight, you know, all the way to the end. And so I'll take the 9.5.
All right, final two questions, speed round, gentlemen, because Mike Palm's got a roll. And there's only four examples of games that have spreads larger than 4 points this week. So it's very tight. Here are your choices. What is the biggest favorite most likely to lose? Cleveland, 10.5-point favorites against Miami. New Orleans, 9.5 or 10-point favorites at home against Carolina. I might have lied. It might be five examples. Chicago, 6-point favorites at home against the Giants. Pittsburgh, 6.5-point favorites on the road against the Cincinnati Bengals. And New England, 6.5-point favorites at home against the Dallas Cowboys. Jeff, most likely to lose outright of those favorites?
The Chicago Bears are the most likely of that group to lose outright for all the reasons we've already stated. They stink on offense. And as long as Daniel Jones doesn't throw a pick six in this game, the Giants are going to have a shot at the end, to win this game. So I'll go to the Bears.
Have we lost Mike Palm?
I don't know.
No, we might have lost Mikey. Mikey might have bounced. He's like,
you want me to do Mikey's pick for him?
Yeah, let's go do Mike's pick.
He's going to go with the Vancouver Canucks as the most likely team to lose tonight. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we hit the wall with Mike, so we might have had to bounce out at the end. My pick you'll go ahead, Todd. You already started. Go ahead.
My pick is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. My Pittsburgh Steelers have one problem. They're good on defense, but they don't have a guy who can get the ball snapped to him. I believe they call that the quarterback. We don't have a quarterback. And, you know, no team wants to go 0-16 in the NFL. This could be the week that Cincinnati gets off the schneid. I could see the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road losing this game.
Myles Garrett, now this morning, claiming a racial slur from Mason Rudolph. Did you see this? Parlay and I on Monday, before guessing lines, we were talking about before the show on Friday morning after the game between the Browns and the Steelers the previous night, we said unless there was you know what stated, there is no justification for what Myles Garrett did, and he should be suspended for the rest of the year, including the postseason. And that's in fact what happened. There was no mention of any racial slur.
Even if there was,
let me finish, Todd. God. So here's the thing: it wasn't stated then, right? But here we are now a week later. A, if Mason Rudolph, in fact, did use the racial slur, let's all just get on the same page and say, I get it. But would you really wait a week? Would you really wait a week to mention this? And if it's not the case that Mason Rudolph actually didn't say it and you're lying about it now, you should fucking be ashamed of yourself, Myles Garrett. You really should. I don't know how you guys come down on that. Todd, I'm sure you have something to say because you wanted to say it 2 minutes ago.
I apologize for interrupting you, but I got out of control there. But, here's the thing. You can call me any racial slur in the world, and racial slurs are terrible. You can call me anything you want. I don't think I would swing a helmet at somebody's head. Okay.
No,
I don't
care. All I'm saying, it doesn't look, two wrongs don't make a right, but I'm saying at least in that case, you might understand what I'm trying to get.
No, you're making a good point.
Yeah.
You're making a good point that if he says something racial, the guy might lose his mind and go crazy. But I still think we have to have some kind of, you know, control of ourselves where we don't swing a helmet at somebody's head. I mean, that thing could have killed the guy.
Oh, could have killed him.
You want to kill a guy?
He could charge him for assault and battery. Legit. He could. He really could.
Yeah. And then the other thing is to how late this comes out. This feels like the late call when you're playing pickup basketball and you shoot and you wait to see if it goes in and then you decide whether to call the foul at the end. You can't call for a racial slur 7 days later. I mean, that's just not cool, right?
Not cool if it did not happen. By the way, my pick on this, and you guys hit on my two top choices for this. I'm going to lean with Jeff here. I am going to say it's the Chicago Bears. I could see a scenario where they lose that outright against the Giants, largely because of the Trubisky factor. And I agree with Mike Palm. There was no hip injury to me. I think he just needed to be benched. And I think Matt Nagy finally realized that. Last question. If we lived in a bizarro world and we were forced to bet a side on each and every one of these football games in Week 12 in the National Football League, including tonight's game Thursday night, but you were allowed one free pass parlay, what would it be? What would you not bet at all?
I'll pass on the AFC South matchup that I'm surprised that it's not on Thursday night for the second time this year. And that's Jacksonville at Tennessee. Titans off a bye, Jags off a bad performance against Indy. Gil, I have no clue what either of these teams truly are now that Foles is back for Jacksonville and that Tennessee is really in a bizarro world where Ryan Tannehill actually has looked pretty competent the last three games. So I want absolutely nothing to do with that AFC South battle.
100% my pick as well. No clue, no reading. That was the one guess on Monday where I'm going, this has to be three, right, Chrissy? Because there's just nothing else you can make it. And he's like, absolutely. Whenever that game comes up, that's usually the answer to this question. Todd?
I think you guys have a good answer, but I'll throw one other one out there. Carolina, New Orleans. I don't know what I'm getting from Logan or Kyle Allen. And, so I don't really know at this point, you know, is it the Kyle Allen we saw early who seemed to be able to keep it together? Or is it the Kyle Allen we saw the last 2 weeks? You know, what is that all? So I don't want any part of that Carolina game. And one other thing, the NFL could probably get a bulk rate on a therapist or a team of therapists to both talk to the entire San Diego LA Charger team along with Mitchell Trubisky. And the two, both of those guys, you know, maybe it would just be Rivers and Trubisky, and you could do a tremendous business on therapists because those guys need tremendous head work.
Trubisky and who?
Philip Rivers.
Yeah, Philip Rivers, God bless. Isn't he? I mean, did you know? I mean, I did not see the first half of that game because I was under, but I got to watch the second half of that game from the hospital gurney, and it was funny because we were in a recovery room, and so I couldn't see anybody. I was looking straight up at a TV, and everybody else in there was also in beds looking up at TVs, but everybody was watching this game, and literally on the last drive in that recovery room, people were like, oh, God. Every time Rivers did something wrong, like you could hear people moaning. They're like, oh, yeah, same old Chargers. Was there any doubt in your mind that there was not going to be a good ending for the Chargers in that?
Well, how could it be? I had +6.5 on the in game. I was like, of course, Chargers will get down to, I even said it before the drive. I said, they'll get inside the 10 and won't get it in.
Or Todd, how about me having over 27 second half and having 22 points in the third quarter and it's still staying under in the second half?
That is I was thinking about that after the game. I was thinking if people had the over in this second half, I didn't even know you had the over, and that was just atrocious.
Jeez, that's horrible. Todd, if I had known that information that you had a bet, I would have shared that with everybody in the recovery room. I'd be like, don't worry, Wishnev's got it. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's everybody nursed their injuries. All right, we've done all we can do. I'm sorry that we didn't get Mike's answer to the last two questions, but we went over time on him. But for Mike Palm, for Todd Wishnev, who is learning. Yes, you are learning the Superchargers song, for those who have asked.
San Diego Superchargers. It's a much harder song to sing than Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Miami Dolphins.
Okay, we know you like that song. But what I'm asking for you is, could you learn, and I'm really serious about this, could you learn a verse and the chorus of the Superchargers song? Okay.
I will try to, but I want you to know it's really a much more difficult song to sing.
I know, but I think people, as long as people are enjoying your music, can you at least develop a repertoire? And I think
I might as well.
And I think the Superchargers song. And you have to, I have a request from my buddy E, because he was a Chargers fan growing up. There's like a part where they say the word sky and it's sky I, something like that. And you have to nail these little things about the song. So I really want you to pay attention.
I started listening to it a little bit on YouTube. It's more funkadelic.
Yes. So
it's a much harder song to sing, but I will absolutely try my best to be able to coerce my vocal cords into being able to sing it.
Fair enough. That's all I can ask. For Mike Palm, for Todd Wishnev, for Jeff Parlay, producer number 5, who was kind enough to step in on a short notice here on this week. Thank you to everybody writing very nice things on Twitter to me. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you on a numbers game tomorrow. Good luck with all your picks. Week 12 in the NFL. Thank you so much for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.